Don't go AFK on us.
Follow us online at checkpointxp.com.
Checkpoint AFK.
Hey, welcome into Checkpoint AFK on B-Pod Studios, the place to be for podcast discovery. This is Checkpoint XP's lifestyle podcast. From cosplay to consoles, we cover everything you care about when you're away from your keyboard. My name's Nate Bender. So glad to have you along in the studio today. I've got Weird Beard. I've got Joe, Robbie, and Norris. No Chad today because he can't watch things on time.
He's a lame. I don't think he's watched any of them yet.
No, he hasn't.
But he's definitely watched some of Mando, just not enough of it.
He's here in spirit with us today.
No, he's not. He's down the hall.
Yeah, he's just down the hall. But we are going to be talking about two shows today that have been blowing up the fall season and have just wrapped up. I'm, of course, talking about The Mandalorian as well as HBO's The Watchmen. Those discussions ahead here today on Checkpoint AFK, but we like to start off our show with some Apple Podcast reviews, and I'm happy to tell you guys that we have none.
I'm kidding.
I was about to say, why are you happy about
that? Oh my God. I was like, wow, that was like Jack a triple deke.
I'm kidding. We've got one new review, which means that, listen, you guys are not doing your job. I need you guys to be out there leaving us Apple Podcast reviews.
Like at least two a week. That
seems good, to read on this show. Yes,
that seems
exactly.
Reasonable.
I think we have a problem where every time we get a bunch of them in a row, we just read all of them, assuming that we're going to keep getting them in at that pace.
He says we, the rest of us read them.
I always throw it out to you guys and ask you, should I do another one? And you guys are always like, yeah, let's do another one.
So I think what we just need to do is stop saying how many of them we got. Just like we got two. Like, no matter what the number is, we got two.
No, just say, there's a review.
There is a review.
Okay.
This week's review comes to us by E!Killa.
I like you already.
As in like E! True Hollywood Stories?
Killa.
I guess.
As in Killa Cam? Is it Camera?
Maybe. Maybe it's Cameron. I don't know. But E!Killa says, saved by old times. It's a five-star review.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Says, thanks for going forth with this newer Checkpoint concept. I'm a longtime LBR fan who traditionally loves this type of dialogue between some of my favorite host personalities. You guys said it straight and speak your mind freely. Hashtag mute Juxta. That's an old one.
Well, there's a
very
bit.
Old.
Yeah. Holy cow.
Toby Sandwalker of Coral. Well, thank you. We appreciate it. You didn't need to identify yourself in what
FF14 server.
Yeah. I know, right?
Deep cut.
Yeah, real deep cut.
Hey, can I just make a mention about on Twitch, where we're live right now, things look super sexy.
They do. You should check out our new layout if you're, I don't know, maybe watching this on YouTube, or if you're listening on the podcast, you should absolutely head on over to our Twitch channel and YouTube channel, because, of course, this will have already been live, but you can check out the replay over at our YouTube channel. But a brand new set of visuals from Rick.
I think we look kind of good on camera.
It looks great, but I will make a comment at obviously Rick has put himself in the middle a little bit of the artist inserting himself into the work.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
One would think that maybe, I don't know, Nate, the host of the show, should
I'm just saying, if this was a Last Supper painting, I would be Judas right now, okay? That's what I'm saying.
I mean, they didn't put Rick. Alice in the middle of the Brady, like, she was in the middle of the Brady Bunch logo.
I'm the Alice.
I just donated 200 bits, and my name is not up under the look at Mr. Moneybags over here. Prompt.
Oh, well, yeah. Now it just popped up.
It popped up, though.
There you go.
But I want to be Mr. Moneybags.
I will. All right. I'll put you in right now, Robbie.
You and your feeble
it's not
ego.
Real.
Yeah, right. Anyway, guys, make sure that you are following us over at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Lots of stuff changing about our podcast, the brand, the channel. And you can get all the latest updates on all of the changes right here on Checkpoint AFK. We'll talk about them most often here because it seems like a pretty good collection pot for everything that we're working on. But do we want to give an update? I mean, we're in the process of kind of rebooting some of the shows that we work on. Obviously, you guys have noticed that the Checkpoint AFK podcast, or I'm sorry, the Checkpoint XP Daily podcast feed has not updated over the past week. That don't unsubscribe from that podcast feed.
Yes, please do not do that.
There is new content that is bound for that feed in January.
Yep.
It is closer than you think.
It's literally like 2 weeks away.
So even though it says daily on the actual podcast itself, I know that sets a certain expectation. That show is coming back, and it's coming back in January.
Can't say exactly what date.
Yeah,
but
we'll have more information about that in the new year, and you'll find it out here on Checkpoint AFK. Some of our other shows, The Other Identity, Low Team Damage, all of those are kind of being put through the ringer at the moment. Those podcasts will also come back in January.
We are retooling, and let me tell you guys, you should be excited.
Yes,
now,
very.
One of the things that should hopefully come before January is the Checkpoint XP On Demand podcast, where you can get full episodes of our nationally syndicated radio show from beginning to end.
The whole show.
You can find the whole thing. That will be a podcast. We were hoping that it would get up this week. It looks like it may not, but it will. That should be in place long before January. So there's just a little bit of an update on the things that we're working on internally here at Checkpoint XP. We appreciate you guys being so patient with us while we're kind of in under construction mode. So we appreciate it. And if you want all the latest, you can of course ask us questions over on our Discord server. Make sure you join that, and also join us live at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. And one more time, leave us some podcast love, some podcast review love on Apple Podcasts so that we can read it here on the show. We're officially out of reviews to read, and we want to make sure that we start 2020 right with a whole bunch of podcast reviews to read here on the show. So make sure you get in on that. Apple Podcasts is how you do it. So like I said, coming up today on Checkpoint AFK, we've got two topics to discuss: The Mandalorian and The Watchmen.
Now, oh yes.
Not all of us have seen both shows. Most of you guys have.
It's not like we have a show that we get paid to do to talk about these things.
No, not this one.
You know, but I just, the fact that everybody hasn't watched them is deeply troubling to me.
Yes.
Especially one of them being 30 minutes an episode. You got time.
I think
you got time.
In this room, I can promise you fewer people have seen Watchmen than have seen The Mandalorian, which I honestly think is a shame, to be honest.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Listen.
I'm with you.
It's not about the time commitment.
How ain't it?
Because it's about the financial commitment. I'm not willing to pay the 12 or 13 bucks or whatever it is for Disney Plus. There's just not
what
enough.
What phone carrier you got?
Verizon.
You get it for free.
No, I don't.
How?
I never got that offer.
How?
I never got that offer.
Wait. You don't have unlimited, do you?
I don't know what plan I have.
You need to check because you get it for free.
I absolutely do not get it for free because I never got any inkling of a promotional email or anything.
My Disney Plus is free as hell.
I got it. So anyway, my point being, I'm waiting. I'm saving myself for for the new HBO service that's going to be coming out because there's way more on that that I'd rather watch. So you're telling me that I need to invest the 12 or 13 bucks a month, whatever it is, to watch The Mandalorian and then just cancel it?
No,
I'm not going
to
do that.
I'm telling you to use your free ass offer from your phone carrier to go and watch The Mandalorian.
I don't have a free offer.
You lying.
No, I'm not. You can check my email account.
How do you not know how much data you have? Like, what data plan? I'm very confused.
Because I don't use my phone. I don't use data on my phone. Right. I've never hit my data cap.
Talking to the people who don't lie on air. Robbie, you've seen, what have you seen?
I unfortunately haven't been able to watch the most recent episode this morning. We had a very Very busy morning.
We did have a busy morning. So I will allow that. So, but are you caught up on Watchmen?
Yes, I finished Watchmen.
You will stay. Joe, what about you?
I am here for Mandalorian.
You're lucky.
Bummer.
And
Bo Shows, bros.
All right, so I'm going to step out as these tools talk about the Mandalorian.
Wow.
You know, and you know what? I'm kind of over the Star Wars thing.
You know what? Go sit with Chad.
Go hang out with Chad.
Over
go
it.
Play
go
some
hang
Minecraft.
Out with Chad. Right, y'all go play Minecraft.
You know what? Here, I'll make this deal with you. I'll watch The Mandalorian on a plane. It's the only way I'll watch it.
Would they have it on a plane?
Are you gonna
they probably won't.
Are you going to go on a plane anytime soon?
Nah, not really. I'm not planning on it. But that's
company doesn't like to send him places.
That's really the only place where I'm like a captive audience for something like that.
Literally captive, as in you can't move.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't go anywhere else.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm not into it.
So. Trash Panda says, I'm over the Star Wars thing. Is about to step out to avoid spoilers. Sure you're over it, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. To be fair,
if I want to go back, why should I spoil myself?
You're going to see the movie, though.
I am going
to
see.
So I understand. You're going
to
see the movie.
Out of these two shows, I think if you know, seeing Watchmen over Mandalorian is the right choice.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that. I think if you have to choose one of the two shows, Watchmen is the better show.
Absolutely,
I might agree with all of
it. Look, Mandalorian ain't changing lives.
A real good
I saw two episodes of Watchmen and haven't watched any more. Well, I've watched every episode of Mandalorian.
That's because your taste in TV is just
no,
so
Star Wars. You want to know what it is?
Woefully pathetic.
You want to know what it is, Joe? My drops are done. I need drops.
I fail.
Here we go.
I'm white, you know? I'm white.
That's what it is.
That probably has a little bit more to do with it.
Robbie's drop is more accurate than you would think.
So there you go. That's what's coming up here today on Checkpoint AFK. Don't go anywhere. We're talking The Mandalorian coming up next on Checkpoint AFK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Don't go AFK on us.
Follow us online at checkpointxp.com.
Checkpoint AFK.
Joe doesn't know how to rejoin.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint AFK. Thank you for that, Norris. So, just for that,
I wonder why he left the show.
That's right. I know we were going to come back and talk about The Mandalorian. However, we got to start with a terrible EU fact to start the day.
Oh, yes, I love these.
Oh, it's time. So
see, I actually really wanted to be like, I actually have watched The Watchmen, and we're going to talk about it first.
No, we're going to talk about Darth Vectivis.
Yes.
Hold on, can we take a guess about
who he is?
About him?
Yeah, please, guess something about Darth Vectivis.
That Dark Vectivis.
Dark Vectivis?
Whatever
Darth,
his name is.
Darth.
Yeah. He's Darth Vectivis. Sounds to me like he's really good at algebra.
You are correct.
Vectoring?
Yeah.
You're correct. He is very good at algebra, I guarantee it.
Nailed it.
What else?
Can I make a guess that he came as an orphan raised to then kill his master?
By wolves.
I mean, but that's prerequisite.
But not necessarily being an orphan. I just see it as like another lame, like, I took you in and now you must kill me.
Oh, okay.
No. I would say no.
He has mastery over black holes.
He might, but it's not canon.
Can he time travel?
He cannot time travel.
Yeah. No. Anyway, what is Darth Vectivis?
Darth Vectivis is well known as being a Sith Lord who's not actually particularly evil, despite being very powerful in the dark side of the Force. He lives by a strict code of ethics and became the most wealthy Darth of all time. He did abide by the rule of two until it came time for him to take an apprentice, and instead, he just decided, no, I'm just going to get really rich, and he died peacefully on his bed surrounded by loved ones and family.
Darth Vectivis sounds like the nicest Sith Lord that there kind of is.
He is about as nice a Sith Lord as there could possibly be.
Would he donate to charity?
I'm sure if there was a tax like loophole.
Yeah, I was about to say,
yeah,
for
sure
the tax loopholes.
Yeah, he was not a particularly evil Darth. He was just really big on capitalism.
It's literally Jeff Bezos as a Sith Lord is what it
pretty
is.
Pretty much.
Okay.
So that's Darth
the dark side is stupid.
Oh, this is the
just dumb.
That's not the worst EU fact I've heard. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yes, it is.
No, for what they set up the dark side to be, that is objectively dumb.
Well, I'll say this. It wasn't a particularly entertaining comic.
Yes,
by any stretch of the imagination.
The ballad of Darth Vectivus, just, you know, taking advantage of ununionized labor and getting very rich for it.
I will take Darth Vectivus over the magic gauntlet and Skippy the Droid any damn day.
You know, something, you're not wrong about that.
Fair.
That's fair.
Anyway, Mando.
Right. Yeah, let's talk about The Mandalorian. We're now 7 out of 8 episodes in. There is one episode remaining.
Yes.
We want to talk about this one now because they strategically positioned it before episode 9 would come out, Rise of Skywalker. We thought that it would be because, well, there was going to be a lot of stuff that would play into the Rise of Skywalker that we were going to need to know about.
No.
That literally didn't happen. And Robbie, you haven't seen this episode, mm-hmm. so we're not going to talk about like all the deep spoilers of episode 9. There's really only one
like
that
one,
I would call
yeah.
a major spoiler. We'll talk about some of the lesser stuff that happens,
mm-hmm.
Because there is one thing that I do think we're going to see happen in
all
episode 9.
And we will make sure we tell Robbie to leave if we get into the weeds.
Yeah, so let's start though with kind of an overview of how we feel about The Mandalorian.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely great. I love the sort of Western, like spaghetti Western.
Oh, yeah.
Can you still consider it? Because the first like maybe 2 or 3 episodes.
The first 4.
Were very, but they were dripping with like wannabe Western
vibes. Oh,
yeah. It was just
one. As this has gone on, it's felt less and less like committed to that theme.
I think that's fine, but I think, you know, because of the lone wolf and cub Westernness, like the more people that get involved with the story,
exactly,
the less Western
See,
it feels.
I think that early on that they were setting him up to sort of be that lone wolf. I think that once you got that vision and everyone accepted that, you don't have to stick to the strictly sort of Western vibe.
I think episode 6 was the furthest they strayed away from the Western. That was a heist movie.
That was a heist
movie. This most recent episode, again, that felt like the traditional Western to me again.
Yeah.
At least that's how I felt about episode 7.
Yeah, and I think that's really to the show's benefit because with these sort of bite-sized episodes, there's only so much like helmet and non-talking you could do in an hour. And I think by making the episode short and making them just vibey, and word to Ludwig Göransson and his like music and sound design that I rock with very heavily. But I just think by having that vibe in Star Wars, which is something that Star Wars in its, you know, original trilogy and especially in like the first movie borrowed from quite a bit. I think it was just a really dope callback. Like, Joe, we talked about it. It was like, yo, the first episode of The Mandalorian, I was like, yo, this is dripping in episode 4 right now.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah, I mean, the whole show plays out as an homage to the original trilogy, right?
Yeah.
Like, every kind of... And honestly, you see a lot of what you would experience in, like, KOTOR and in the games in this show. You see kind of a lot of that kind of ancillary side character building, and then mm-hmm. you move on to the next thing.
Let me ask you something specifically on that thought right there about how much it pays to all the original ones. Because I enjoy it too. I think it's a great show.
Right.
Love Baby Yoda.
Of course.
But do you think that there's anything that the show suffers from doing too much of that? Do you think that it stops it from potentially living up to its own unique sort of take on stuff? Because one of the things that I've seen a lot of people, specifically Master Capelli in our chat, said earlier, you know, he goes, we were all talking about Mando last night. General consensus was that we all like it, but I'm ready for the story to fucking go somewhere.
So, and here's the thing. I'm going to say no. I think the story itself is fine, and I think it's for two reasons. One, it's 8 episodes long. If it was 12, I would have a problem with it. And what we're seeing is an era of people being used to being able to binge a show versus having to watch it week over week. It feels like this story needs to go somewhere because we've been watching it 1 week at a time over 7 weeks. If we had binged this all out in a weekend, it would be a tight, contained narrative about the Mandalorian mm-hmm. finding Baby Yoda and what that means.
Well,
and then it would be over.
Let me just say, I think the main... when people first describe the original trilogy, right, it's a space opera.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. Like, mm-hmm. it's mainly about huge characters and, like, all the symbolism of it and everything. I don't know how much Mandalorian really kind of respects that. Like, I think that they're less... Mandalorian is much less about, like... setting up characters of the good and the evil, because I don't think TV like that exists anymore, right?
Well, not only does it not exist anymore, I'm tired of people who are Star Wars fans thinking everything has to fucking connect back to the films.
It yes. doesn't. First of all, it doesn't. Absolutely not.
The world and the lore and the mythos of Star Wars is large enough to take a portion of that galaxy, a portion of that world, and have it be people just doing shit. And I like that. I like the fact that yes, while this does connect back to the remnants of the Empire, if this never connects in any way to some sort of larger Star Wars narrative, I'm fine with that. I think that's really cool, because I'm tired of everybody feeling like everything must lead back to the Skywalkers in some way, shape, or form. It's the same thing, the same issue that you have, like, with Rey in the movies. Is, oh, Rey's got to be a Skywalker. She's got to be a Skywalker. Rise of Skywalker. It's clear that Rey is a Skywalker. I don't give a fuck.
No, she's a Kestis. Obviously. Clearly.
But
no.
the thing is that you can't have an entire galaxy of shit and somehow have everything lead back to the same four motherfuckers.
I agree with that, but again, as the chat has pointed out, since episode 3, it's like he's just been side questing every episode.
The whole show is a side quest.
See, what I want out of Mandalorian is I want it to be Power Rangers, in the sense of Power Rangers was just bad guy of the week.
Episodic.
Yeah, it's the thing that just happened. I would much rather be invested in a show of the Mandalorian doing something that week, you know what I mean?
With Baby Yoda.
With Baby Yoda, have it end, and then something new the next week. Like, okay, with them resetting every week.
But
that's what that is, and that's what it's intended to be, then sure. Okay, yeah, that's fine.
But
great.
That's what episode 5 through 7 have, or 4 through 7 have been.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically Mando side quests.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, but and episode 7, though, is kind of the payoff to that, where we see some of those characters coming back to help out.
Yeah.
And you know, do something with the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
So, it's...
In the same way that characters from Power Rangers have come back to help out. Mm-hmm. Like, a callback is fine, but I get what Rick is saying, but I just think a lot of it does have to do with the fact that, yeah, people are consuming it week over week,
yeah.
and they're saying,
well, it's
like,
not just
it feels more stretched out.
It's not just, I think, the effects of binge culture. I think it's also the effects of serialized drama, because
yes.
even when you look at shows like... Like, take NCIS. They very much have, like, the criminal of the week,
right.
but there is still an overarching story that you're watching throughout the season as well.
Not every show can be The Sopranos. Not every show can be Breaking Bad that does callbacks from 3 seasons ago.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be... Star Wars is dumb.
Breathe,
like,
Rick.
Like,
breathe.
As a contained idea, Star Wars is dumb. In execution, not dumb. But, like, just if I were to explain it to somebody off the street, they're like, sky wizards with light swords. And you're like, ugh. So I just am... I don't want it to be serious. I do not want it to be a deathly serious Walking Dead slog of 7 seasons of trying to get to one MacGuffin that, you know what I mean?
That, like, happened in season 2.
Yeah, keep it simple, man.
Or the end of season 1, yeah.
Hang out with Baby Yoda, do cool Mandalorian shit, and I'm pleased. That's
for
all
how
I
long?
Need. That's all I... It's literally the show. All I need.
Just forever.
Yes.
Why not?
But that's the thing... This show is 8 episodes long. Like, I feel like people think are like saying it's overstaying its welcome. I don't think so at all.
No,
like,
it's 30 minutes an episode.
But I also feel like especially the way that it was set up with you know, Baby Yoda being this like mysterious thing, and obviously even from a wider perspective, like you know, us looking in on a fucking Baby Yoda, like that's a big deal, right?
Right? It's a big deal.
And if now, and we know that people are after it, mm-hmm. and if now suddenly just for the rest of forever in the Mandalorian, they're just hanging out, like.
Avoiding capture, yes.
I didn't and don't expect, having obviously not seen the most recent episode, whatever,
yeah.
that Baby Yoda is in season 2.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. The plot line around Baby Yoda, like of them being on the run, begins to resolve in episode 7.
Yeah.
And
okay.
it will conclude in episode 8.
All yeah. right. Fair enough.
And, I have no doubt of that.
But the part about, you know, Baby Yoda in the story continuing and you know, people having an issue with the fact that the story feels like it's not going anywhere is the fact that this is a guy on the run. Things like that don't resolve in wide sweeping narratives. They're small experiences. When you think about fugitive movies, right? You think about The Fugitive, or you think about like Mad Max Fury Road, right? That is a very small part of a very big world that takes place between a very small selection of people over the course of a very small segment of time.
Here's the difference, and I think this is the reason that people feel this way, is because we're not seeing the danger, right? Obviously, back in episode 3, you know, Baby Yoda was almost assassinated because they knew the fob, right? And then since then, stuff's been going on, and we know they're on the run. But normally, I think in shows like this, you'd get either at the beginning or maybe at the end, you know, a quick cut to what are the bad guys doing? Are they on their trail? How close are they? They would remind you of that impending danger.
But why would you cut to a bad guy where the bad guy can be a gang of people? Or it's a faceless enemy. It's a faceless, nameless enemy.
Sure, but people like to be reminded that it's there.
But what I'm saying is there's no way you can do that without making it the one bounty hunter who's better than everybody who is tracking the Mandalorian. And then
Robert Fett.
But then every other bounty hunter then becomes superfluous. So it makes it so, yes, okay, we know the Mandalorian is not going to get caught by this guy because it wasn't Robert Fett. That would completely invalidate any Deutera antagonist that you would introduce.
If I was able to compare the Mandalorian so far, you know, in the season to another show, it would be Samurai Jack. And the reason why is because it's very much so. The pacing is supposed to be the pacing for a reason, because when you have not a lot of stuff happening, it makes the times that something does happen that
impactful.
Much bigger, right? Some of the best episodes of Samurai Jack were of him just walking through forests and taking those long, they did it intentionally to leave.
Like long cuts,
which were
very, very, very rare for a cartoon.
Correct.
Yeah. For animation.
And so that's what I'm hoping, and I see this as, is very much so like, yes, not a lot is happening on purpose, because Star Wars is telling this giant space opera. If you remember literally the last Star Wars movie, how much shit happened in what was like a 24-hour span? How long was that movie?
It's supposed to be like 4 or 5 days.
Yes, four or five days. Total. All that stuff happened in 4 or 5 days, and it was crammed into
two hours.
Can nothing in the Star Wars universe just breathe? You know what I mean? Can we not have time have nothing happening?
And that's my point. So I know this is Chad saying, you know, it's paced also like Cowboy Bebop, which Cowboy Bebop has a ton of episodes that the normal freaking anime fan would have called filler. They're not filler, bro. Yes. There is not one pointless episode of Cowboy Bebop, just like there is not one pointless episode of The Mandalorian. Huh. So you look at how Cowboy Bebop is paced, same thing, bounty hunters, on the run, gangsters, and all that type of stuff, and they have certain episodes where there is no impending threat from, you know, Vicious or the rest of his cadre and the triads and stuff. There are episodes where they just pull a heist.
Yeah.
There are episodes where they just find one person. Well,
and it's the same problem that all things that happen in the Star Wars universe have, is they can't do anything too big or grand without opening up the question of why didn't we hear about it in episode 7 or 8 if they've done that. It's the same, like Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. I absolutely love it, and spoiler warning for something at the end here. Spoilers, good. Cal Kestis survives to the end of the game, which now opens up another question of, that's another Jedi.
How's there a Jedi just walking around this bitch and no one knows?
3 Force users come out of that game that we have no accounting for. Ahsoka is still out there. Ezra is still out there from Rebels. Like, there's so many characters who can use the Force out there that we have no context for now. And it just opens the question of, where are they?
But maybe they're just chilling like Darth Vectivus, man.
Yeah, they're the light side equivalent of Darth Vectivus.
But again, it's a whole galaxy. Like, I get it. There's, you know, hyperspace travel and all this type of stuff. But it's a fucking galaxy.
Sure. But
some shit can happen on this planet and nobody on the other planet knows about it.
What? Don't they have
email?
Why is that
hard for people to understand?
I'll tell you why. Because they have tracking fobs that apparently you can just give to anybody that just knows your exact DNA location. That's why.
That, again, if you ask too many questions of Star Wars, you're not going to like the answers.
Yes,
that you get.
I know, but at the same time, if nobody has those tracking fobs on them, you don't know where
right.
the fuck they
but at. But my point in saying that is, like, we have a lot of Jedi out there unaccounted for, and meanwhile, we have to watch an episode 8 as the rebellion is down to like 8 people.
Yeah.
And no one's coming to help. It's like,
you know what?
Really,
do you
no
blame
Jedi
them?
Are going to show up to help?
Do you blame them? The last time we knew where all the Jedi was, they killed them all.
I mean, you're not
point
wrong.
Taken. Why would the Jedi be... Dude,
yes.
Luke didn't want to help the motherfuckers no more. What are you talking about?
That's a whole new story that you have to tell, though. If the Jedi have become so dark and jaded that they are not interested in the rebellion, that's a whole new story you have to tell starting in episode 9.
Not really. You make that a side story. That's a side show.
The reformation of the Jedi is a side story?
Yes.
No.
Dude, where's my Jedi?
Yeah. Okay, let me explain. Hold on.
If they call it that,
that's
I'm
hilarious.
Into it, actually.
First of all, Star Wars is not Jedi Wars. It never has been. It never will be.
You'd like Drew Karp-Sharon an awful lot.
No. Star Wars is Anakin Skywalker's story and his progeny.
So how
Anakin That's, fucked up.
Yes, that is... Star Wars, subtitled, How Anakin Skywalker Fucked Up.
Yes.
That is the entire arc of Star Wars, the main films.
Yes.
So anything else that you want to talk about in terms of how the Jedi Order reforms and stuff... Technically, in my opinion, it doesn't have narrative space in the main films. It just doesn't. Because that is too separate from what the fuck Anakin Skywalker and his progeny have done. So you have to talk about that one thing. If you're going to talk about the Jedi, Disney Plus is right there for you to milk this shit for another 50 years.
And we're going to get our Obi-Wan series coming up in the spring, which I'm sure is going to open up
a whole new can
of worms.
But you know what The Mandalorian has sort of taught me, though?
What's that?
Is that I don't give a shit about Obi-Wan. Stop telling me stories about people I already know that you're going to be bogged down and have to worry about canon and rules
I actually
and all
agree
this
with
stuff.
That.
Start
I agree with
creating
that.
New shit. Like you said, whole galaxy out
why
there.
Why are we still talking about Obi-Wan?
Pick a part of it, forget everything else, explore it. Talk to me about these crystal people.
Yeah.
No.
Talk to me about these crystal people.
Okay, why have we never seen a crack dragon?
Now you're dancing with the devil, though, because you're right. They can go that way.
I want to know
the
story.
But you're not going to like the result.
I want to know the story of the first dude who discovered the midichlorians.
The scientist.
You don't. Who is the Watson?
Why do you want to know that story?
Who is the Watson and Crick of the Star Wars galaxy?
I want to see his whole career go to shit because he came up with this theory and people like, that's stupid. It's space magic. And then he found evidence.
I was going to say, like, clearly it's not stupid because it ended up being the accepted doctrine for a while.
Exactly.
But that's the point. And to Robbie's point, part of what makes The Mandalorian good is the fact that it is not trying to dick suck the mainline movies.
Yeah. And it's cool. It's
doing its own thing.
And it's cool when they throw something in there, like when he went to Tatooine, like... That was cool.
Yeah. Fine, do a cool call.
That little stuff, that's great.
If you
that's
are
cool.
on the run in the Outer Rim.
Fan service is nice.
Why wouldn't you be on Tatooine?
That does open an interesting question. Why didn't we see a crate dragon when he went to Tatooine? why did we get the Mudhorn instead? Why not show a crate dragon?
Well, the Mudhorn wasn't on Tatooine. That was on the other planet where he
dealt with
Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
So can we...
I have spoken.
Can we go around the room and name one thing that you would do to improve The Mandalorian for where it's at? You know what I mean?
I would say to improve it, I definitely would like to see... I like the interactions between him and the other Mandalorians. Mm-hmm. I really like the... What is that culture and what are those people doing to survive and maintain their culture now that we know that there is more than just two or three. We know that there's at least a handful of them. What are they doing in order... Because we know that they got found out, so they had to move. So this could be answered in the last episode. I don't know.
Well, we know the Imperial occupation of Mandalore, probably, is the reason they had to move.
So, I mean, we know why they had to move, but I would like to know more of that story, of what that journey was like. I think that would be really interesting.
All right, this is going to be a hot take, and I think there are going to be a lot of people who don't like this idea, but I'd like to actually take a page from Arrow's book. From the CW, and I think what I would like to make some of these for people who might feel like, oh, this is just too much side questing, nothing's happening, there's not a lot we're getting out of this. I would have liked them to slowly be exploring his past through like small maybe flashbacks to him as a child that have shown why
we were getting
he
that
was
for a few
set,
episodes
that was showing why he's been set on this path.
Because to be perfectly honest, I don't really think he's a Mandalorian.
He's not. No, they've straight up
said. They already said that? Yeah, he's not really a Mandalorian.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
I would like to know
what
that's
about. He was taken
about.
In by them. And so just not just flat out, oh, this was me when I was blah, 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 but just finding really clever ways to where you don't actually see how it all adds up.
Yeah.
Until you start getting,
maybe
like,
Mandalorian like
that.
Isn't even like a race. Like, maybe that's not a race of people. Maybe
not
like,
anymore, you mean?
Yeah. Because
it was at one time.
I mean, yeah, because there's Mandalore, the planet.
Right, yeah.
But maybe, like, you don't have to be born on Mandalore, or your parents don't have to be Mandalorian.
Right.
To
now,
be
now,
a Mandalorian.
Now it's just a way of life.
Well, yeah,
now,
it's just, it, this is the way.
Have you guys seen the jokes about the some of them, like, clearly don't take off their helmet? You've got the Orthodox Mandalorians and the Reformation Mandalorians.
Do you have something, Joe?
You know what? Honestly, I don't think the show is its most interesting when he's doing the lone wolf and cub thing. I think it's the most interesting when he's interacting with other people. Like,
I agree.
The whole episode with Cara Dune was
great.
I love that episode.
I love seeing how people play into the dynamic that him and Baby
Yoda
because
Cara Dune's like, man, you'll see this hot widow, dude, if you'll take that helmet off and quit fucking
around.
You're
right, because that episode was the most interesting. You got to see the way that he interacted with a bunch of other people, the way that Baby Yoda interacted with a bunch of people, the way that he perceived all of that.
That was
the best episode, in my opinion.
If I could do anything, I'd force the people making the show to watch all of Westworld. And the reason why is because Westworld fell apart the moment that it stopped paying attention to its theme.
Yep.
When things started to just be, like, weird for weird's sake. When things started... You know what I mean? Like, Westworld...
I was just talking to Nate about this! Westworld is the biggest missed opportunity HBO has ever made because they decided to be weird and word vomit for the sake of it.
All right, I'm so... That makes me feel so much better about not continuing with it after season one.
Westworld kind of devolved into, like, a David Cage game.
Yes.
Right? In the sense of like,
it's that is the best description of Westworld I've ever heard. It is literally a David Cage game committed to real film.
And so what I want them to do is to watch it and then do whatever Westworld didn't do, because Westworld had the perfect setup and the premise and the execution was terrible, but like the setup was great.
I feel
like Mandalorian is just, they came out of the gate so strong on this Western and this is the guy and he's like the man and don't you fuck with him. Like, that's the feeling you got.
Okay, something that I actually want to point out really quick is we all know Mandalorians are legendary warriors.
Yes.
Everybody knows this.
Yes.
There is one too many people that try to step to him for my liking.
I would love to see somebody see the armor and be like, nope.
Yeah, like, I feel like once an episode, someone has to challenge his authority, and I want to see someone walk in and be like, bye-bye.
Yeah,
just walk back.
Just somebody to turn around and like, you didn't tell me he's a motherfucking Mandalorian.
Yes, everyone's like, oh, this is a Mandalorian. Doesn't look like that much. Like, fuck you.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that, I think, is based out of, like the Mandalorians are kind of a thing of legend at this point. Like, a lot of people who would, like, have Mandalore armor probably aren't actually Mandalorians, and as we know, he's not actually either, although he was trained as one, so...
The point is people said that about the Jedi till they start getting choked out.
Listen, the number of times that someone talks shit to a Sith Lord drives me nuts. And we were just watching episode 8 the other night, and Hux, as soon as he sees that Snoke is dead, is like trying to like step up on Kylo Ren, who of course starts choking him out. And it's like, dude, you know he can do that. Why? Anyway, the last thing I want to hit on is good. Wow. Wow, Norris.
Sorry.
Whoa.
Wow. Sorry.
Just give a quick shout out to everybody watching us on
what
Twitch
a noob
right now.
You
Thank
are.
You this is always streamed live. You can check us out at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Make sure to give us a follow. You can donate bits. You can hang out with us. We're fun.
Yeah.
Good reset.
Can I please, by the way, thank you for just talking right over my drop because you don't have headphones on?
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry.
Damn. So, Master Capelli in the chat does say Joe once mentioned in Sutor how playing a Sith meant people don't screw with you. It was my favorite part about playing as the Sith warrior, specifically, is that it's the only MMO I've ever played where people are legitimately terrified to ask. Like they have to give you the fetch quest because you need the XP, but like they're like, so you're like a Sith Lord. I really shouldn't even be asking you this. Oh my God, please don't kill me.
Yeah.
That's what it should be like.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to hit on here is the one thing in this episode that I think does actually play into episode 9, something we're going to see there, because most of it, I don't think will. We saw a new force power.
We did.
We saw the ability. No, I don't think this is is this a major spoiler?
I mean, I now know that there's a force user, so.
Well, there's been one all the time.
Baby Yoda.
Yeah, but I mean, he's used it once
right.
so far.
So we see heals. We see force healing.
Force healing.
Oh, which...
Which we've... Yoda has hinted that he
could do it. Knew that yeah. he had, but he was trying to do
yeah,
it.
He sure.
But we've
it.
Never actually seen the force heal before.
Nope.
Abrams has said that there will be the introduction of new force powers in the ninth movie. I'm willing to bet this is one of them.
Probably. And so I don't know what theory it could be, but who could possibly be force healed in Rise of Skywalker?
This is nerd shit. I swear to God. Like, I could care less about... What, unless it's fucking ripping people apart, I think force powers are lame. Like, I honestly, I
You'd
do.
Also like Drew Karp, Sharon.
Like, I'm not trying to be a downer, but like, if that is the reason that they moved up this episode,
yeah,
because
hold on.
Force healing's yes. gonna be in the movie.
I agree with
totally.
You.
Fucking lame.
I agree with you.
I think it was nothing but a PR stunt.
Yeah, I see. That's the thing. I don't know what else it is, though.
No. This is why.
They knew moved nobody it up. Was going to fucking watch it this weekend.
People were they were still gonna watch it, obviously, but they didn't want it to conflict.
Not this weekend.
They didn't want it to conflict, and by moving it up a day, just the mere act of doing that...
Got us to move our whole ass podcast
Everyone
up.
Looks yeah. at that and goes, why? It has something to do with the movie.
It has to.
It has to have something to do with... No, they literally just moved it. And this isn't the first time that Disney's done something like that. Do you not remember that when they first announced when Infinity War was going to be like that week, a bunch of other movies cleared the schedule, and then what did they do? They moved it up a week.
They did, yeah. You're right.
Just right. to fuck with people.
Yeah. But anyway, everybody's feeling here is that the show is pretty positive.
Yeah, yeah. We're all a fan positive. Of The Mandalorian.
I 100%.
It's not life-changing, but it's a good show.
I would watch this over many other shows.
Absolutely.
And I think that it, for a Star Wars property, is doing justice to what a lot of the other garbage Star Wars has come out. You know, like Disney at the very least is treating it with reverence and not just like, hey, whatever, like people are flying around in spaceships.
It's not the comics.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's not the comics and beyond just reverence, I think it's doing something different with the Star Wars property, which is something that probably hasn't been done since fucking pod racing.
Yeah, I mean, they did some weird stuff with, like, Rogue One, but yeah, you're right.
Okay, and Rogue One. I take it back. Rogue One was the first time I ever felt somebody looked at Star Wars through a new lens
mm-hmm. yeah.
and said, I got a different take on this.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right, guys, well, when we come back with Checkpoint AFK, we're going to be talking about The Watchmen. Well, these guys are going to talk about it.
Nate's, not you, you lame.
Yeah, Nate's going to rejoin the crew here, and we're going to sit down and talk some Watchmen, so stick around.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Don't go AFK on us.
Follow us online at checkpointxp.com.
Checkpoint AFK.
Welcome back to Checkpoint AFK. Hope you guys enjoyed that little discussion all about The Mandalorian. And now we move on to the better show of the fall. No, I'm just kidding.
No, well.
No, you're not.
Depending on how you look
no,
at
you're
it,
not.
I'd say that, yeah,
you're
no,
not.
That's probably
you're not.
That's
as
probably
much
accurate.
As I love the Mandalorian.
Mandalorian.
Yeah, Watchmen is brilliant.
There's more value there.
I'm not going to, obviously, no spoilers or anything, Nate. My stance on Mandalorian was a lot of failure to commit to a theme.
Sure.
To really kind of live and bathe in it.
Well, here's the other side of that coin.
Yes.
Where you've got the HBO show Watchmen, who is totally unafraid to wrap their entire show around a central theme.
Oh, it lives and bathes and breathes.
They slit the theme's throat and let the blood wash over them, like, straight up. Like, it is so dripping
so,
in message.
This, by the way, is my show of 2019. This is probably the best TV of 2019. Hands down.
Even more than maybe 2019. This Watchmen as a series feels like early 2000s drama.
Yeah.
If you remember like 6 Feet Under.
I remember Six Feet Under very fondly.
Deadwood.
Deadwood is an excellent show.
So shows like that that were not afraid to not only commit to a theme, but to really kind of explore... What are you saying? You know what I mean? Like, TV shows for quite a while have felt like, hey, we're going to do a cool show, and then we have to have cliffhangers, because that's what TV shows do.
Right.
And TV shows do this, and TV shows do that. They were like echoes of an echo of an earlier TV show.
A lot of that started with Lost, and then all the HBO dramas, The Sopranos, The Wire. Everybody was sort of copying and emulating those three shows.
You guys are really going to roll your eyes at me, but the show that started this, that started breaking
fucking
those rules,
Peaks.
Was Twin Peaks back
Fine.
All the way back in 1989. And it's true because, and even more so for The Watchmen, I had just actually read this article this morning that during 2018's The Return of Twin Peaks was when The Watchmen went into pre-production. And Damon Lindelof, who was the showrunner for The Watchmen, has stated that they basically overdosed on Twin Peaks. And that was sort of like a very subtle theme running through the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
Was how can we try to replicate the same feeling that I'm getting from Twin Peaks?
I think that's
admirable. To watch something like Twin Peaks and then to go out and not just try to be as weird or out weird it, because that was sort of what I thought like Riverdale tried to do.
Yes,
mm-hmm. That's sort of what like even to a lesser extent like AHS tried to do. They just tried to out weird Twin Peaks, and I don't like that.
But the one thing about Twin Peaks, to not go down a rabbit hole, is that you can watch a David Lynch production and know it's a David Lynch production.
Yep.
You could watch, like Alias, when Alias was out and everything. You go, oh, I know, boom, I know who made that.
Yeah.
When 24 was airing, you'd be like, boom, I know exactly who made that. I have not seen a show like Watchmen in years to where I can go and understand that there's like
yo, Lindelof is all over this,
and there's a reason why he's doing it. It's not like we have, oh, this person hasn't or this character hasn't gotten a lot of screen time, we need to make sure to let's do an episode based around them.
Well, and that was a lot of the failings of Lost, because Lost was 100% like bound to that because they were an ABC show and they had large stars in there. We've got to make sure that Matthew Fox is getting enough screen time. That's why you end up hanging out in the fucking bear cages in the middle of season 3.
Oh.
We've got to make sure that, we've got, what's his name? The guy who played John Locke. We've got him down here and he's costing us a mint.
Watchmen knew exactly what they were doing.
In fact,
with that last episode, literally 30 seconds before he came back on screen, I looked at Katie. I goes, man, where has Looking Glass been? There he is.
There he is.
Like, it was perfect.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing, is that Damon Lindelof working on a show like Lost, and then kind of, after he did Lost, he did Prometheus, and then I kind of lost track of him for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, he's learned a lot of stuff while working on Lost and working on Prometheus that he put into play here.
Yeah.
And I think that he really created something special here.
No,
any show, like, honestly, any show that opens up with the bombing of Black Wall Street has my attention.
No, straight up. And that's, I want to highlight that right there. It's a very good, not just that scene, but taking a show in 2019 and making the centerpiece of your story, the foundation of your story, essentially a commentary on white supremacy.
Yes, race and
race
the relationship
and
between the citizens and police.
Yes.
I mean, these are all incredibly important and relevant issues.
But also, really depressingly enough, like, really, really risky things to do in our current, like, cultural and political climate.
Norris, can I ask you, if this show was released in 2012.
It doesn't get released in 2013. That's number one.
But if it did, would it have the same kind of impact? Would people respond to it in an earlier time period, or is it a con, you know, like a bunch of things came together at the exact right time?
I think it, a lot of it is just like how it was with The Wire, where it was the time in which it came out.
Yeah.
Did nothing but help how good the show was.
Yeah, totally. I think if you present a white supremacist boogeyman in 2011, 2012, nobody takes that shit seriously.
Yeah, I think it gets laughed away.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same impact.
It's more fiction back then.
It's not even as imposing because, yeah, racism is horrible, and those that find racism abhorrent would still have found it abhorrent. Mm-hmm. But at that point, they were, you know, like the KKK was reduced to such a sideshow that they're doing, you know, talk shows and
yeah, they're doing Jerry, Donahue.
Donahue and Jerry Springer. And we had been surviving on a constant diet of that stuff for the better part of 15 years.
Yeah.
And so nobody would be able to take something like that seriously.
Right.
You needed Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. You needed Donald Trump.
Nazis in the street.
Yeah, you literally mm-hmm. needed that to be able to make that feel like a palpable threat.
And I think not only did the chance they took with the theme, but also making that conflict central to the story that they were trying to tell.
Yes.
And also making them incredibly toothless and completely ineffectual in the long run.
Yeah.
I think that was the biggest commentary on that ultimately, is that here is this massive white supremacist plot to, you know, become the most
spanning generations
to become the most powerful being in the known universe, that is ultimately only allowed to happen because some other little Vietnamese lady decided that it should happen.
Yep.
I think that's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. To show them to be completely ineffectual, to show them to be incompetent to realize that they're being manipulated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, like that.
You literally
to me,
have her batteries. We stole them. You don't just steal from Lady True. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
which, by the way, I thought was awesome because we saw these motherfuckers stealing watch batteries in episode 3, and nothing else gets said about the fucking watch batteries until the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
This show wrapped everything up so perfectly, and I love that, but let me know what you guys think about that, because I did see a headline where someone said that they felt like too many questions were answered. Because literally every single question was answered.
That's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard.
Why do shows have to go on forever?
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like old man time just complaining about everything. But why can't we just have a self-contained narrative that... Because that's why the series is so effective, is because it literally says, I have a story I want to tell.
And that's it.
Front, middle,
that's,
end.
But that's,
which brings me to the question, do you want there to be a season 2?
No.
If it comes back,
I'll probably watch it. But if it never comes, I would prefer it if they do
tell a new story.
So here's my take on this: is that
make it like True Detective.
You know, the original run of the Watchmen books was so impactful for the exact reason, Rick, that you had just brought up, is that it told a story, and then that story was over.
That's it.
And then there's nothing else to tell until someone comes along, you know, 20 years later
and finds
a way to tell a different story. But what's so brilliant about this one season of The Watchmen is that it mirrors the original story of The Watchmen almost beat for beat, character for character. They're foiled. They're inverted. They're mm-hmm. they're subverted in some instances. But at the center of it, I think Alan Moore, if he watched this Watchmen series, of course he didn't.
He wouldn't.
Of course he didn't.
Of course he
wouldn't. He's an anarchist British wizard. Yeah. Of course he wouldn't. He's got hobbits to go help find Mordor. Okay? Like he's got really important shit that he's got to do. But the thing is that if someone sat him down and said, "Alan, you really need to see this," they did something special with it, I think that he would not only approve, I think he would actually get a really big kick out of the way that the story was continued, but continued in a way that almost brought a full circle closure to not just the story that they set up, but the books themselves.
No, I think it was something that, you know, really took the source material, which was the books. And by the way, I love the fact that they used the books and only the books as the source material. But I love the fact that, you know, Lindelof went out of his way to say, no, the books are gospel.
Yeah.
We will not, you know, cannibalize the canon.
Yeah, we're not retconning anything.
We're not retconning anything. But I think also,
except for maybe Hooded Justice. Is that a retcon?
It's not a retcon.
Because they never really defined the character.
It's not a retcon.
Yeah.
It's a flip or subversion of that character, which, by the way, is that not one of the best hours of television ever committed
I want to talk about episode 6, or was it 6 or 7?
I believe it was 6.
I think it was 6. I want to talk about episode 6 in and of itself. But, yeah, like, the way that they looked at the original source material and was like, okay, let's find our version of Rorschach and made him looking glass.
Yeah.
You know, the way that they tied together, I thought was so brilliant.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not one of those people who's really upset at the end, thinking that they wrapped up too much stuff. They answered too many questions. I think they left just enough kind of out there for the fans to decide. That, you know, again, that mirrors the way that the original books ended, where Rorschach drops off the file to the journalist, and it's kind of on the audience to decide whether or not that information got disseminated.
They pay lip service to by saying it just became, you know, kooky white supremacist tinfoil hatting, which is awesome, by having Looking Glass literally wear a tinfoil hat.
Yes. Here's the thing. So, how do you think Rorschach's message about the conspiracy that Dr. Manhattan and Ozymandias hatched in the original books, how do you think that gets co-opted by the white supremacists? Because we never actually get a window into what the book or the file actually said. We see people reading it. We have people reference it as a kind of monumental piece of media that had come out in the 80s, but we never really find out how it's been warped or co-opted by the cavalry.
I think in the same way that, you know, a lot of urban legends or other, you know, what's the loose change and shit like that. I think Rorschach's journal is like the loose change of that era, of that fictional era, where there's just enough people who believe it wholeheartedly that, you know, it could get co-opted by a community, but enough people just look at it and go, come on, bro.
Right.
Like, come on, dog. But for real.
I just want to say to me, I hate drawing parallels to real life. But, you know, a lot of the ways that some of the kind of like white conspiracy or white supremacy conspiracies have really spread over the past 4 or 5 years has been the what if, right? Mm-hmm. In that it's things that are not provable. Things that, you know what I mean? Things that are just kind of like, oh, Jews control the entire world. How? Well, they just do. And you go, yeah, but...
And there's no burden of proof.
Yeah, there's no burden of proof.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that the show does so well, in that any seed of doubt or mistrust that's kind of like placed through the way that they... through the events of the story... There's no definitive way to just be like, look, didn't happen.
Yeah.
You can't just disprove something, right?
Because it's like, okay, you know, Hooded Justice, Angela's granddad hangs the chief of police, and he goes, I hung the chief of police. And she goes, fuck out of here, bro.
Yes.
And then you see what happened, and you're just like, technically... He did.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. So it's
there is a little bit of unreliable narrator going on.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone is an unreliable narrator besides Dr. Manhattan.
And I think that's why it's effective.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, stories that are built upon like, well, here's a thing that happened and this happened and this happened, and this is the only way that things work. The way that it gets grounded and feels more realistic than a Mandalorian that we were talking about earlier is that... from my point of view, it could be different than Norris's point of view.
Yep.
And that just, it makes it a very interesting watch of being like, even if you agree and you're 100% on the side of one character, you know that they are biased. You know that they have a point of view that they are seeking from. So even seeing all the characters' POVs doesn't give you the kernel of truth to know definitively this is the only thing that could have ever happened.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. But Robbie, you said something when we were talking about The Mandalorian about flashbacks, right? And I hate flashbacks with every fiber of my being. I'd much rather it be...
In general, I agree.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the way that they use them in Arrow that I mentioned earlier, I always thought that was lazy, and I thought outside the first episode, they never should have did
that
in the Arrow.
I'd much rather to have somebody unreliably recount events.
Sure.
And then have other people give their take on it in-universe than have a flashback. But as we're talking about with Episode 6,
yeah, we got to talk about this.
That
it's a clever way of doing
nuts.
It.
See,
you guys got to remember, one of the nostalgia played a bigger, way bigger role in the comics than it did the movie.
I just want to put this out there, though. For the record, I wouldn't call what they did, technically it was, yes, a flashback. I wouldn't call that a flashback because she was reliving
those.
Yes.
That's experiential. Yeah.
Yeah. And it shared more in common with like scenes where, you know, like a director is trying to show you like a first person perspective of a drug trip as opposed to,
a
flashback.
Well, yeah. And the fact that she experienced those, like those memories now become her own.
Yes. Yeah.
Those are now part of her. Right?
Right.
It's not just being told or seeing. She lived that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about was, of course, the final episode.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all of this machination that's going on. Well, actually, before we get to the final episode, let's talk about Ozymandias living out on Jupiter. Moon of Jupiter.
Which is great.
Which is, it was a bizarre sort of sub-side story.
For the longest time, I was adamantly about, like, I don't even know why they keep doing this. Why you keep showing this to him. Why is he important?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way that it ultimately ended up concluding with him coming back to Earth, being saved by Lady True, I thought was a phenomenal.
Oh, for sure.
It was great, but... What was so fascinating about those scenes was, the reason that Ozymandias is there is to be praised and adored,
mm-hmm.
and how empty all of that is as soon as it is regimented and, you know, the only thing that that these beings can do. And I love the idea of actually seeing the experiment that Dr. Manhattan is talking about in sort of the final pages of the Watchmen book, where he's like, I'm going to go create new life, better life. And the life that he creates sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Those servants suck. Like, they have no emotional range. They have no ability to actually experience life. And so they're at the whim of whatever master they have.
One of the things that I was struggling with through a majority of it was, you know, because we know that, you know, Dr. Manhattan, higher plane of existence, whatever, can see everything. Basically, you know, goes off to do his own thing. And so I was all struggling with the idea of, why would he come back then? Why her? Why does he all want this? And because of this, and we know you can't just create life.
He does exactly what is the most human thing in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He finishes his experiment. He creates life and goes, well, that's fucking boring. And moves on.
And goes to do something
else.
Goes back to the only place that there is actual life.
How many times have you guys done this on a fucking video game where you're like, oh, I've got everything customized out, all of my wrestler intros are exactly the way that I want it.
Wait, what?
All of my divisions are exactly the way that I want it, and now I'm done playing.
This is oddly specific.
So who has a better like worldview / plan? Thanos or Dr. Manhattan?
I think
it's very similar.
I think they both suck equally.
But who whose side do you sit on more? You know what I mean?
Here's who I put. I think Thanos ultimately was a victim of poor imagination as opposed to a poor ideal, right?
Okay.
Because I think his idea is ultimately noble, but he just... You have a gauntlet where you can damn near make anything possible. It's lazy.
Yeah.
It's lazy to just go, just reduce everything by half.
Get rid of half of them.
That's not how shit works. Because one person could be shittier than 2,500. But I digress. I think Dr. Manhattan's plan in terms of creating life didn't just lack imagination. It lacked empathy. It lacked humanity. It lacked all the things that make life and experience good, because he could no longer experience life as a normal person would, which is why his meeting Angela and making the decision to essentially become human again makes his character so much more compelling, because he knows that he cannot go and create life being who he was. He can't experience life that way anymore.
Thanos at least had, and it maybe not in the second half of the Infinity War saga, but in the first part where he did it because he thought that he was being a benevolent god. Yeah. You know what I mean?
His speech in Infinity War made him oddly sympathetic.
Well, remember, the whole idea was that in Infinity War, he was the protagonist and he becomes the monster in Endgame.
But, yes. But Dr. Manhattan, not once did I ever sit back and be like, man, he kind of has a point. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was very...
Well, I mean, which plan are we talking about? Are we talking about...
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think he's ever, like, just, like, concretely said, this is my plan.
Well, yeah, because no, but... I would say that the gigantic psychic squid was more Ozymandias' plan.
That was Ozymandias. I agree.
Right, and then Dr. Manhattan was complicit in it by killing Rorschach.
Because he just said, you got a point.
Yeah.
I guess maybe when I'm saying plan, like his outlook.
On
what the fuck are you doing, man? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, Thanos, I could corner and be like... Do you know why you're doing the things that you do?
I don't think that he really has one, because the fact that he's experiencing everything at the same time, he's just letting it play out.
He's just doing.
He's as much a cog in the system as anyone else is.
Yeah, I don't think it's
he can
a,
just see the whole thing.
I don't think it's a plan. I think it's just more of a doing. I can do, so I will. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more how Dr. Manhattan viewed it, until the moment where he sat in a bar with Angela and decided to be a human dude.
And he decided to eschew the role of responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, which is why I love the line of saying... eventually in the last episode where Angela's granddad says, you know, for somebody who could do all the stuff that he could have done more. He could have done more.
Yeah.
Which I completely agree with.
Totally.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
You're an asshole.
I don't sympathize with any suffering that he goes through.
But again, that's one of the core themes of The Watchmen. You put on the mask, you're instantly an asshole. You've now got something to hide.
Yep.
You're now trying to think for other people. You're trying to make decisions for other people. I mean, Dr. Manhattan and Ozymandias will sit there and tell you, and all day, every day, we averted nuclear disaster. We averted nuclear Armageddon. Did ya?
Yeah.
Right. Did ya?
Is that better?
I mean, because we're talking about an alternate America in 1984. Yeah, we got pretty goddamn close to that line. But we're here in 2019 right now, and there's no nuclear apocalypse. Who's to say that if Dr. Manhattan and Ozymandias had done nothing, that those tensions wouldn't have reduced?
That it was a guarantee.
Exactly.
It was no guarantee.
There was no guarantee. There was, and again, like, I think that this is one of the central themes to The Watchmen, is that, you know, like, they made a choice. Nothing is written in stone.
Yeah.
Nothing is, you know, like
concrete.
But not only
did they make a choice, they made a choice based on what they knew, and on top of, well, Ozymandias made a choice based on what he knew, and Dr. Manhattan said, "Your math is sound." That's all he said.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a choice. It was, "Your math is sound." And for what we know, Dr. Manhattan doesn't exist in potential futures. He exists in the future.
I was just sitting here thinking about this same thing, and the fact that he let it happen, mm-hmm. he now has the fortitude to say, you know what? Your plan's going to work.
That's what it was. Your plan's going to work, and you will avert nuclear disaster, but there's nothing about Dr. Manhattan or his power set that says he saw the nuclear disaster.
Right.
Because he can't exist in alternate futures.
I think what he saw was just the giant squid and the inevitability of Ozymandias putting his plan into action.
Yes.
So, you know, so is the real villain of The Watchmen at the end of the day Dr. Manhattan? Because he really committed, I wouldn't say the original sin, mm-hmm. but he committed
yes,
one
he
of
did.
The worst most egregious
he could have stopped
sins
he
in all of the Watchmen by killing Rorschach and stopping him from exposing mm-hmm. the plan.
You know what it feels a lot like is it feels a lot like any time travel movie, right? There's always that moment that they go through like the rules of things you can't do and it's you can't yeah. alter the past because then it sets everything on wonky, like fucking right.
all the kind of
shits are even the same with the butterfly effect. I think seeing the future and then knowing to make the choice of, I do not want that to happen. I don't want this to get out dead. I think that's what starts it. You have to own, you know what I mean? That the train was on this track here. You made the choice to take it somewhere else. So right. it is the original sin, I think, of, to be honest, if nuclear apocalypse is what was going to happen, that's what's supposed to happen. Anything you do to change that is your fault.
But I forgot who said it, but I believe a character just says, like, he could have just snapped all the nuclear warheads out of existence.
But also remember that part of it wasn't just to stop the nuclear war. The idea was to have that threat there.
Yes,
so that
to
eventually
unite
you can. Yeah,
it was.
And
it was Ozymandias.
And work toward the utopia.
Yeah, it was.
This was just the first step.
It was right. Ozymandias because he basically said, yeah, he could have just got rid of the warheads, but what was to stop them to, you know, make a nuclear armament again?
Well, yeah. And then, I mean, really, the governments of the world would have been working to stop Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So it'd have been all right.
But I think I understand the logic there. If you remove the nuclear warheads, now the nuclear warhead is Dr. Manhattan himself.
That's fine.
And whoever controls Dr. Manhattan now controls the world. And at that time, it was the U.S. government because mm-hmm. he had just been over in Vietnam killing Vietnamese people.
And then he fucked off to Jupiter.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Later.
But that's sort of my point, and which is why I'm happy that they basically, you know, zap that particular Dr. Manhattan because the door is open to say that maybe his powers have transferred somewhere else. But I'm happy that they zapped that particular motherfucker out of existence because for the longer he lived and the longer that he existed, you forever had somebody who just held the fate of existence itself in his hands.
Yes, all exactly. Right. You need to be able to break the cycle of Dr. Manhattan knowing what the fuck is going to happen.
And
to do that, you
got
to get rid of Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah. And seeing it through.
To put a bow on it, does anybody want to describe Watchmen in one word? Your feelings on it, maybe?
Oof.
That's tough.
Courageous. As a show, it's courageous.
Yeah.
I think it's 2019.
I don't think that I can put it into one word, but the main thought that I've had since it's over is I'm becoming increasingly angry with just like the mainstream in general because I get done with The Watchmen and no one's really talking about it. There's some headlines here and there. That's fine. You expect that. But I think what pisses me off the most is how much people ranted and raved and tried to shove down our throats how amazing the fucking Joker was.
Yeah.
But then Watchmen gets none of that.
I mean, it's
you know, screw all those people.
You know why, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
It's a good.
I'm white, you know? I'm white.
It's a strong critique to ask whether or not, like, mainstream media and movie companies weaponize the alt-right to really promote the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, like, where did they leverage a...
I don't think there's any question.
No. All you have to do to weaponize the alt-right these days is to get canceled and then play the victim.
Yeah.
And then blame it on somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that SNL guy. Like, that's exactly what he did.
If I had to describe Watchmen in one word, I would describe it as committed. You know what I mean? Like, everything that it was... in that show, the positioning, the message, the theme.
I'd use the word precise.
Yeah, it was very, like, well thought, and they didn't stray from it. I think they started with a vision, and because they knew the beginning, middle, and end, it stayed consistent throughout of saying, this is what we're doing, this is what this means, the end. Have a good day.
Yeah, I would absolutely, the one word that I would put to it is vision. They had a clear vision, right? Yeah. Like, they executed it front to back, and... in that same way, I do think that it's a perfect, almost mirror interpretation of the original Watchmen.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many different things, whether it's, you know, the direct foil of
Rorschach
and Looking Glass, or whether it's the evolution of Lori Blake from, you know, being the Silk Spectre to now being the FBI agent. You know, and one of the things that I loved about Looking Glass was at the end of the day, he's a foil to Rorschach, but he's more Rorschach than I think the audience or himself gave him credit for. Mm-hmm. Is at the end of the day, he sticks to his fucking principles.
Yeah.
He sticks to his principles.
And he's about the truth.
Rorschach wouldn't have put the DVD in.
Nope.
Rorschach would not have even watched it. He would have taken the DVD as evidence, and that's all it would have ever been. He wouldn't have peeked behind the curtain. But Looking Glass did, and he stuck by his guns.
Yeah.
I think that's, I like that from the character, because that's kind of what I think what most people wanted from Rorschach.
Yeah.
You know? I have a final question that I want to put out there to everyone. You know, the last episode, the final scene of the last episode where you've got
Angela,
who's cleaning up the eggs from the floor. You know, you get that quote that her grandfather tells her, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. And you get the flashback audio of them in the bar saying, like, yeah, I guess I could create an egg and imbue it with my power. And then the very last scene is her, you know, potentially trying to walk on water. What do you guys think? Does she have Dr. Manhattan's powers or not?
No. I think this is just like the end of Inception, where they spin the top and then it cuts right beforehand and everything like that.
Well, obviously you don't want leave them with an actual answer.
But here's the point to me is, I'm gonna be honest, I don't think it matters.
No, well, first of all, it doesn't.
No. I'm saying even if there's a season two, I don't think it matters, because I think, as skeptical as somebody like Angela was about Dr. Manhattan's powers, and how, in a way, I think she actually began to resent his power and really more appreciate the person that he was and that he became to be. She never gave two fucks about Dr. Manhattan. She liked the man.
Cal. Yeah.
You know.
John.
Cal. In quotation.
Cal. Yeah.
Right? That's who she loved. Right. She didn't give two fucks about Dr. Manhattan, whether as Lori was in love with John / Dr. Manhattan.
Correct.
I think even if she had his power, she would just be like, I have it, and now nobody else can have it, and nobody else ever will have it, and I'll probably never use it.
I think that's
hard to say, because we saw throughout the book, throughout the movie, how John himself, Mr. Manhattan, changed the longer he had his power. She might think like that to start with, but just being able to see all of time in your entire existence, that has to change you on some level. But I do think that she did get them, because otherwise, why would Dr. Manhattan have made the comment about the eggs to the grandfather, knowing that he would then tell her later?
I like
Occam. That was him putting the egg in there, knowing he's going to put the egg there, then telling the grandfather so that she wouldn't just clean this shit up and throw it away.
I like the Occam's razor version of just no. You know what I mean? Like, I think, and it makes thematic sense to also say no. You know what I mean? Like, there has to be, if you're talking about breaking cycles, if you're talking about things not repeating on over and over and over again, nope. No powers.
This is the other reason why I say yes, right? Because of all the people that I've known in my time, right? If a black woman is God now, I think we're going to be all right. I think we're going to be okay, guys. That was probably the best best choice.
I do think that is a statement in and of itself as well, too.
There is a scene in episode number 8, though, when Dr. Manhattan first wakes up. And he's kind of re-experiencing himself as Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
And Angela goes, you know, somewhere, and she comes back in the kitchen looking for him, and he's out walking on the pool, and he says to her, I'm just trying something out.
Yeah.
Right? Which is a line that was very unlike Dr. Manhattan. It seemed very informal.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and you think, like, oh, okay, he's just kind of re-experiencing himself and waking back up.
No, because he knows that is how she will test out having his power.
If he exists in multiple points in time, that could have been her testing out the power.
Mm. possibly.
Because who's to say that if she imbues herself with the power of Dr. Manhattan that she just isn't Dr. Manhattan now?
Maybe.
I don't know. I love the fact that they leave these questions open to interpretation, but yeah. We get yet another HBO series that ends in a weird, mystifying manner, which
I am completely and wholly satisfied with it. And if
it's better than the Sopranos ending.
And if that is and if that is the end and the last I ever see of The Watchmen as a show, I am totally okay with it.
I would be okay with it too, although I also would be okay with the second season.
See, I wouldn't want another season with these characters, because I don't want to know the answer to whether she's Manhattan or not, but I do like the world.
Yeah, no, I don't ever want to know whether Angela becomes
you
Dr.
just want to know who Lube Man is.
I do want
to know who Lube Man is.
I do want to know.
Is that Lori's little assistant guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
We got to know who Lube Man is.
His name is the Slippery Shard.
Petey.
The Wet Bandit?
Petey. The Silver Bullet?
So J.J. Abrams has said that he has no plans on going back for a second season of Watchmen. Because I think he was a producer on it or something. But I would not mind if they went back, never talked about Dr. Manhattan again. But if we got a second season that was a court procedural of the trial of Ozymandias, I would fucking be in for that shit.
Just have the second season be thematically completely different.
Totally different. Yeah. Go a totally different direction with it.
That'd be cool.
You know, AHS does this all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Like, just go a totally new direction with it. Like, make it like Law and Order. I would watch the shit out of that.
Of Ozymandias. That'd be ridiculous.
Come on, man. That would be fun.
It'd be fun.
I do think that there's some stuff that they set up in the first season that they could follow through
for sure
with on the second
but
season.
But it did
wrap up very nicely.
Yeah, and I'm also just a fan of let things end. Everything does not need to. I don't want shows as a service. I don't want that. Yep. I want let things have beginning, middle, end, and be okay with it.
That's fair. All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us for this special episode of Checkpoint AFK. I think this is the last Checkpoint AFK of 2019.
I believe it is, yes.
Yeah. So we're going to see you guys in 2020.
The future.
Excited. Yes, that's right. And lots, of course, big things happening for Checkpoint XP that we talked about at the top of the show. Be excited for that. That's all coming January 2020. Thanks so much for joining us for Checkpoint AFK. CheckpointXP.com is where you can find out more info about the show, interviews from past episodes, and a whole lot more. Again, that's CheckpointXP.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, as well as Checkpoint XP, as well as Checkpoint _XP on Instagram. Can't forget the underscore. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Checkpoint XP is a production of Beasley Esports XP. For the Checkpoint XP crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, my name's A. Bender. Keep listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.